AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is continuing coverage.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now back to the courtroom.
Okay, y'all can have a seat. All right, the state having rested, defense, you're JOA.
I have several bases upon which Ashley Benefield at this time, Your Honor, moves for a judgment of acquittal. To begin with, as the court knows, the information charges second-degree murder and requires proof that Ms. Benefield acted with a depraved mind. Furthermore, the evidence that exists at this point has raised a significant self-defense claim. And it's our position that, number one, the state has utterly failed to offer any evidence whatsoever to establish the essential element of a depraved mind. And number two, the state has failed to offer any evidence to overcome the self-defense claim that was raised as a result of the 9/11 call wherein my client is heard to exclaim, "He attacked me and I shot him," together with the scratches and the bruise to the left side of her face. So let me expand on that a little bit. For purposes of a depraved mind, we need ill will or hatred. No credible evidence has been forthcoming in any shape, form, or fashion that Ashley Benefield acted with ill will or hatred towards Doug Benefield. What has been established is that Ashley Benefield feared Doug Benefield and that Ashley Benefield wanted to be done with that relationship. But there has been no evidence at all that Ashley Benefield hated him, acted out of ill will, spite, or malice. The record is devoid of any evidence establishing that. There's also no demonstration, Your Honor, of indifference to human life, the alternative element In fact, what there is evidence that in response to this terrible event, Ms. Benefield immediately fled next door to call 911. And 911, of course, is what you do to summon help. And there has been nothing indicated otherwise that Ms. Benefield displayed indifference to human life. In particular, Your Honor, John Sant put the self-defense issue in play. He testified that Ms. Benefield said, "He attacked me and I shot him." The state has failed to negate in any capacity whatsoever, even when viewed in the light most favorable to the prosecution, that there has been proof established beyond a reasonable doubt that Ms. Benefield's use of force was not justified. All we have is he attacked me and I shot him. There's been nothing to undermine that. The state claimed that the release of the Broder report was the linchpin, and I think that that's pretty much been voided entirely by Dr. Broder's own testimony, yet alone Dr. Quintal's. And they have utterly failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the use of force was not justifiable. Under those circumstances, at this point, Judge White, no reasonable jury could convict Ashley Benefield. And if they were properly instructed on the law of self-defense and the state's burden to disprove it, they could conclude that the state has failed to meet its burden. The self-defense context, Judge White, is crucial because it directly contradicts the notion of a depraved mind and that Ms. Benefield was acting pursuant to that as opposed to acting in self-defense. She acted out of a legitimate fear for her safety. Then I have two other bases. Again, the court should remember that the state's theory, very specifically advanced in the opening statement, was that 3 days following the shooting was the denouement, the release of Dr. Broder's report, and therein was the reason for the shooting. Their alternative theory was that she killed him to keep him away from Emerson, their child together. What evidence has been produced to establish that? We heard from Dr. Broder nothing whatsoever contained in his report that was in the slightest manner detrimental to Ms. Benefield. Quite the contrary, Dr. Broder told us he concluded that Ashley had no impetuous tendencies, was not prone to anger. And of course, then there was Dr. Quintal, who said that, yes, she was concerned about the release of Broder's report, but only because she was afraid it would create reprisal from Doug Benefield if he found out what she said about him. And of course, then there's the whole issue about the email where Broder's release of that report was not scheduled for the 30th. The only evidence that we've seen that supports their alternative theory, the state's alternative theory that she killed her husband to keep him away from their child, is this. 5 reports of abuse of Emerson were filed with DCF. Of those five, two were from independent sources. Where is there anything in that that, other than sheer speculation, trying to roll an inference and an innuendo into a fact, where is there anything possible that justifies the fact that five abuse reports were filed, two of which were by independent third parties? How do you go from that to killing Doug Benefield to keep him away from the child? This is their case. They have the burden to produce that. They haven't done it, Your Honor. And we think a judgment of acquittal is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. State?
And Judge, just at the onset, I disagree with a lot of the defense's recitation of the facts as they've come out. I believe a lot of what he said, witnesses said, were not accurate. I don't believe that a lot of the witnesses said exactly in the manner that he just said the things that he said. But anyway, Judge, clearly the state has shown that this defendant killed Doug Benefield. She shot him four times. He died as a result of that. There is no dispute. No one is disputing that she did not kill him. So the only issue would be the depraved mind, regardless of human life. And the defense did mention ill will, hatred, spite, or ill will and hatred, but there is also spite or evil intent. And that is disjunctive, so it's or. And ill will is a very low threshold, to be honest. And the state has shown extensive evidence of motive, of the fact that this woman did not want to share custody of her child with this victim, to the point where she would make allegations against him of sexually abusing his one-year-old daughter and physically abusing his one-year-old daughter. And none of these were sustained, and she moved on and on and on and on. And she made comments like, I'll do whatever I have to do to keep my baby a-hole. I'm running out of time, and she's frustrated that nobody's helping her. I'll do whatever I have to do. She's making all of these comments at the same time that she's making all of these false complaints, and the state does call them false complaints, of abuse to her child. Also, I think defense counsel has made a much bigger deal about Dr. Broder's report coming out than I think the state actually ever did. The state had said that this was the same exact judge that she had not had luck with before, and implied that she didn't want to be in front of this same judge again. And in addition, Dr. Broder's report was coming out, and that was going to be a problem as well. So I think there are several reasons. But when you talk about the actual evidence itself of the shooting, she shot four times. And the entrance wound of the fatal wound is not front. It is side to side. So he was turned away from her. And then it's the state's argument that he was moving his leg to run when he was shot as he's running away. She then just leaves him there to die and runs away. And Judge, I think all of these things together, in the light most favorable to the state, I don't think the defense has put on any evidence of self-defense. The defense has attempted to put in a lot of evidence, and things were objected to and sustained by Your Honor. So a lot of the things that defense just argued have not come in as evidence. So in the light most favorable to the state, we would ask you to deny the JOA.
Thank you. Mr. Taylor, would you like to place any rebuttal on the record?
Very briefly. Thank you.
Or not briefly.
Yep. No, briefly. So here's what we have, according to the state. We have a woman who is going through a divorce, who has no prior history of criminality or arrest, who according to Broder, has no impetuous fits of anger, who has done everything according to the requirements of the law, filing a report, report after report, not doing anything but staying in compliance as to what a citizen is supposed to do, and she goes from that to killing Douglas Benefield on a naked theory. There's no evidence in support for a predicate to establish that theory. There's an inference. You have to take an incredible leap of faith to go from somebody who has no prior history and is living with a gentleman who's committed this kind of conduct, and you go from there to killing him. She didn't shoot him 4 times. He wasn't running away. It's going to be a pretty good trick. As the court knows, the trajectory of the leg bullet was up. So how high do you want him to lift his leg as he's running away? Because she would have to be laying on the floor and shooting up to be able to get that bullet to go into his calf and out his knee. That's a real trick. I would suggest to the court, we have raised the legitimate issue of self-defense by virtue of that 9/11 call. They have failed, and failed miserably, to rebut it. And I thought it was very, very clear. Dr. Vega, I asked him, would this be an accurate statement, Dr. Vega, that the pistol was facing Douglas Benefield when he was shot? Dr. Vega said, yes, that would be an accurate statement. No matter how much she wants to twist it, and I hope she stays with it because I think the jurors will punish her, the bullet may have gone in the side, but Dr. Vega said he was facing the pistol. She was firing from in front of him. That's uncontradicted. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both very much. I'm not aware of any recent changes in the standard by which I'm to make my ruling on a judgment of acquittal. I think I heard the defense argue that no reasonable jury could find the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I know certainly the appellate courts talk about looking at cases in that light, and I believe that's the standard at the close of all evidence, but my understanding of a judgment of acquittal motion is I am to look at the facts in the light most favorable to the state, including any reasonable inferences therefrom, and decide whether the state has established a prima facie case. Am I mistaken?
No.
No.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. So, I think it is a very interesting and unique argument that the defense raised, and they very well could be right that the issue of self-defense can be established during the state's case in chief by a preponderance of the evidence. I don't find support in the law for that. And I think that my findings from earlier are bolstered when you consider at the judgment of acquittal, I'm not looking at any evidence that the defense has produced or any inferences on the defense evidence. I'm looking solely at the evidence presented by the state. I have to construe all facts and in the light most favorable to the state, any reasonable inferences that can be drawn from those facts have to be inferred in favor of the state, and I'm only looking to see if they've established a prima facie case for the charge or charges alleged in the information. So as I look at the information that we all agreed is the operative pleading in this case from November 16th of 2020, the state has made a prima facie case, I think, based upon the facts that have been established. Again, looking at them in the light most favorable to the state, including the reasonable inferences, I do find that the state has established the elements of murder in the second degree prima facie. There's a prima facie case for the elements. So I will deny the judgment of acquittal. You're going to see Ms. Brown. I'm assuming you want to talk to her first and look through these emails before we address the Richardson, but that's just an assumption.
There have been some developments with the Richardson. You're talking about the Richardson issue based on the emails.
The 391 emails.
It's 391.
I might be mixing apples and oranges. Something was 390 and something was 316.
I think there's two issues. I think the first issue was this document that we got that you unsealed had a part missing. And so I could not identify this as something that we gave to the defense. Mr. O'Keefe and I have talked, and he showed me the part that was missing. And based on that part missing, I will go back now and try to find it.
So, what is it, a header or something?
Yes, it was the top of an email.
The auto-generated header?
Yes.
All right.
And he was saying that it came from a Google search warrant. I said I would not have gotten Stephanie Murphy's emails from a Google search warrant. Well, apparently this was in Ashley Benefield's Google account. But the heading forwarding it to her was not on this. That being said, I can no longer represent that we do not have this. However, the defense listed it as number 391. Is that what the number is?
277
on their exhibit list. And it listed the entire Google search warrant return data. And I recognize that there's not a lot we can do now with what I'm holding in my hand, but I just want to reiterate that the defense is supposed to give us what they intend to enter. So saying to me that the Google search warrant return, which had hundreds and hundreds of documents, that is not complying with the rules of discovery. The rules of discovery are that you give me copies or at least clue me into where it is and what exact pages are intended to be entered, and that's the rules of discovery. So I don't know that there's a whole lot we can do to solve this now, and anything that there would be to solve, I can hopefully do that in the future before we have any more testimony about these, but that I can just tell you that that's sort of some of the difficulty that the state's experiencing, is that we're looking at some of this for the first time because we haven't been put on notice of it.
So are you asking or alleging a Richardson violation? Because it's per se reversible error if I don't conduct a Richardson hearing.
I would ask you to go ahead and conduct a Richardson hearing, Judge, and then just to be safe.
And do you want to do it now?
Yes.
All right. So the issue is a discovery violation by the defense, and I just need you to outline it specifically for me. Are you saying that they did not turn over evidence they should have, or is this based upon the alleged failure to specifically identify documents and other tangible objects that they intended to use at trial? Or is it something else?
It is the second, Judge. It is that a list of 365 items, and they are all folders, computer folders with attachments and different pages, is not the notice that is required by the defense when they are required to give the state notice of what they intend to enter into evidence. So while the file umbrella may have been listed on this exhibit list, the state was not put on notice or told which pages would be used as an exhibit. So that would be the substance of my argument.
Did these emails come from the state? Were they recovered by law enforcement?
Yes.
And so you listed them in your discovery and provided them to the defense?
Yeah, and Judge, I have not been able to verify that. This is the first time.
Yeah, so don't say yes if you haven't verified something.
I am saying yes because the defense has shown me the page that I was missing that puts the puzzle together and shows that it probably was, as they are saying, that it came back to us in a search warrant amongst thousands of documents. So I, without verifying that, I would take that as true based on that representation that I can probably go back now and trace it and see that it's probably part of the thousands of documents. So that would not be the basis of my objection or my allegation. The basis would be not complying with the specific notice requirement of what exact documents you intend to use at a trial.
All right, do you want to be heard?
I think what keeps bouncing around in my head is I understand and I appreciate that even though there's hundreds of thousands of pages, we are supposed to extract and list specifically what we intend to use. But what keeps bouncing around in my head is I never expected a witness that the state called come in and perjure themselves. And now, you know, we would have been fine if Stephanie Murphy had just told the truth. And now we're in this position where the emails clearly demonstrate beyond any shadow of the doubt that the testimony was wrong. So I think the court should factor that into the position we find ourselves, because I understand and I appreciate technically it's a violation. I would suggest the court certainly wasn't willful. But let's assume the state gets their way. We live with perjured testimony. That can't be right either. So we have to find the happy medium here somehow, understanding and appreciating that we were on guard for this development months ago. And that was why we issued the subpoena to the JA. Well, I will tell the court candidly, I never actually expected to see it again on the way to stand in front of the jury.
Thank you, sir. Rebuttal?
Judge, I think I'm trying to find the right word. On July 16th, Your Honor held an ex parte hearing, as you know, that you unsealed yesterday. At that hearing on July 16th, Mr. Taylor said, on page 4, I have an envelope to seal this if necessary. I have Ms. Murphy's stand your ground testimony that I will pass to the court.
You might need to slow down a little bit.
That I will pass to the court, which I marked, where she says exactly that, that the hearing on the release of Dr. Broder's report was scheduled for the 30th. The shooting took place on the 20th. He goes on to continue talking that was the point. These are the very emails he provided Your Honor during that hearing. So it's clear that he anticipated from this unsealed transcript and the documents that Ms. Murphy was going to testify the exact same way she testified at the standard ground. So to now say he had no idea that she would do this, which the state finds it offensive, he keeps calling it further testimony, but that he had no idea this was going to be the testimony is confusing. I can't think of the right word. Because it's clear from your hearing that he did, and Your Honor asked him, was he turned over? You had extensive conversations about these emails, whether they were provided, those kind of things. So it's clear that in the state of the defense, 6 days before trial, they knew this was an issue, and they knew that it was going to become an issue. So to now say that they did not know is confusing to the state. So the state feels like this wasn't intentional. They had a hearing with Your Honor that they asked for it to be private, And although they said it was about Vicki Mechanic, they're the same emails. It's the same email chain. And so the state feels that it was an intentional violation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both very much. Richardson is very specific, and fortunately for experience purposes, I've had to do quite a few of them. Unfortunately, I still continue to do them because they're discovery violations. It is one of the most basic fundamental ideas in Florida criminal law, and anybody who's done any practice in federal court or other states knows the length, breadth, and extent of how open our discovery rules are. This is not supposed to be a surprise or a gotcha state. With that said, I am not aware of case law holding a Richardson violation for a failure under the defendant's obligation under 3.220 to specify those documents or tangible things that they intend to use at a hearing or a trial. It's much more along the lines of never disclosed or hiding. So with that said, I don't think ultimately the Richardson framework or rubric fits this situation. I think the findings I think I'm going to make and need to be made are, I don't think there was a willful violation to the extent of the defense hiding the ball or hiding information or withholding information. If I understand correctly, there was a search warrant of the defendant's email, which the state had, and whether the state had a chance to go through it or not, they turned it over to the defense. The defense apparently combed through it and found information that it wanted to use. So I don't find a willful violation there. Is it trivial or substantial? Quite frankly, that remains to be seen, the weight that a jury is going to give to this. Do I think that the email string could be interpreted by Ms. Murphy and Ms. Brown as being meaning different things? Could it be received by the jury to be substantial in their decision making? Possibly. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't find that it was a substantial violation. I find, and I think that this is an appropriate finding, that it wasn't in full compliance with the rules, and I will, as part of my ruling, direct the defense, especially as you embark on the presentation of your portion of the case, that you do comply with Rule 3.220 and your obligations. There should be no doubt now where your obligations are and what they are and what you need to do, and you must comply with that. You must identify witnesses and list them that you intend to call at a trial or hearing, and also identify those documents or tangible things that you intend to introduce. More so than these 12,000 or whatever the number was, documents, we could pull something out of there. I think the obligation is different, and I agree with that interpretation of the rules. The final analysis is the prejudice. And it's not the prejudice we typically think of. The answer is, how would the other side's trial preparation have been different? Certainly, I can imagine the state may have made different arguments. They may have prepped witnesses differently. But just at the end of the day, this was in the state's possession from whenever they had it from the search warrant. So I just don't find that there is any prejudice. So that's my findings on the Richardson hearing regarding the emails. I had down that I was supposed to do another Richardson hearing. Was that the only one?
It was about Faith Brown because she was not listed.
Ah, yes. Okay. Do you want to be heard on that?
Can we just have a minute? We were just discussing it. Not to ask for a Richardson hearing on Ms. Brown. The state's concern was that along with these emails, it feels a lot like sandbagging to the state or trial by ambush, as I think your judge, as your honor called it. And that was our concern. But in the light most favorable, in our mind, to the defense, we'll assume that they realized once that Ms. Mechanic couldn't be called, then they listed Ms. Or they were planning to call Ms. Brown. I don't know, because I'm not sure when they thought Ms. Mechanic could be called.
Now that you've had it, and you don't have to respond, now that you've seen my order that has been unsealed,
yes.
I would think that the way I wrote it would clearly explain that my thought process of who's available to authenticate that email string and where Ms. Mechanic would fit on that hierarchy.
Yes, sir.
And I think that Mr. Taylor is moving along consistent with my order.
Yes, sir.
Although I will say this, while Ms. Murphy testified extensively about the email and the substance of the email, you never authenticated it with her. You never laid the predicate. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting. So I think she's available to authenticate it, and I think Ms. Brown is available to authenticate it. Sounds like it's going to be Ms. Brown. Sounds like you have the opportunity to depose her this evening. Quite frankly, Ms. Brown may have different thoughts on the interpretation of that email, and you'll have the opportunity to depose her before she testifies.
Thank you.
Okay, so to be clear, Richardson withdrawn as to the listing and calling of Ms. Brown.
Yes.
So hold off on mechanic subpoena for now. The argument about it.
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
I'm just going to put that on the back burner for now.
I suspect that's going to be resolved.
We still have a few minutes. I would like to, at a minimum, read my colloquy to Ms. Benefield regarding defendant testifying. I typically will do this in a trial. I'll do it early on. I know we're a couple days into it. So at least the defendant will know the issues that I will bring up.
Does the court's colloquy include recitation of the penalty?
I don't think so. Let me look real quick.
If it does, Your Honor, I would ask that you
skip that
respectfully.
Fair enough. No, let me look. I don't think it does. All right. All right, Ms. Benefield, listen closely. This is what you're going to hear me say. It might be tomorrow. And then I'll tell you the questions they'll be asking. It might be Monday. I don't know. One of the most important and fundamental constitutional rights you have is the right to remain silent and not testify in this case. You cannot be compelled to testify. That is, the state cannot call you as a witness. It's your decision and yours alone whether to testify or not. You should speak with your attorney about your options and the positives and negatives and benefits and risks with testifying in your own defense. For example, your testimony may provide facts that would prove certain affirmative defenses or allow your attorney to make certain arguments in your defense. But if you testify, the prosecutor will have the opportunity to cross-examine you, just as your attorney has had the opportunity to cross-examine the state's witnesses. For example, on cross-examination, the state would have the opportunity to impeach your trial testimony with prior inconsistent statements that you may have made in the past, or any of the other ways that are allowed by Florida statutes to impeach. I would normally then go into prior convictions, but those don't apply in this case, so I'm going to skip that whole section. It's important to listen to the advice of your attorney about whether to testify or not in this case, but as I said a moment ago, the decision is entirely yours and yours alone to make. So your attorney may advise you that you should testify, and you can say no. Or your attorney may advise you that you should not testify, but you can. If you choose to testify, I will instruct the jury to consider and weigh your testimony and credibility as it would every other witness in this case. If you choose not to testify, I will instruct the jury that they are not permitted to consider the exercise of your right to remain silent as any evidence of guilt or let it influence their verdict in any manner whatsoever. And then the questions would be along the lines of, have you had, not that I won't want to know anything at all that you've talked about with your attorney, but just confirming you've had time to consult with your attorney and make this decision. What is your decision? Confirming just sort of like a plea that you're not under the influence of any alcohol or drugs. You understand what you're doing. You're not being forced, threatened, or coerced to enter, to take this case to trial.
Judge, I have to tell you honestly, no disrespect intended, I think it's intrusive into the attorney-client relationship. I have, as a professional, discussed this matter with my client. My client trusts that I have her best interests at heart, and I think that this unintentionally potentially drives a wedge between my relationship with my client.
Do you have case law about that? There's cases out there that talk about the colloquy with the defendant regarding testifying or not testifying.
I don't have a problem with you advising Ms. Benefield that she has the right to not testify and the equivalent right to testify if she wants. I even don't have a problem with you saying if she chose to testify, then her credibility gets put in evidence like anybody else. I start getting uncomfortable when it goes beyond that. I begin to feel that it is an unintentional intimidation of a woman who has made a choice or is in the process of making a choice after consultation with her attorney, and this is just piling the pressure on the client. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I find it uncomfortable.
You wouldn't be heard for the right. I mean, it's my decision.
I would like to be heard. I have heard this colloquy dozens and dozens and dozens of times. And the fact that the defense acts like this is somehow wrong or intimidating is offensive. And it is not about what Mr. Taylor is comfortable with. It's about what the court is comfortable with at this point. And what is important is that we find out what is in the mind of Ms. Benefield when she makes a decision. That is not for Mr. Taylor to speak. That is for Ms. Benefield. So she needs to know everything that the court is going to do in its colloquy, as we do with every defendant in this position, just like everyone else.
All right. I guess when we get there, I'm going to tell you what I say. And if you instruct your client not to answer, that'll be fine. I think I've shown that I don't get too upset when people disagree with me. So if you say, hey, don't answer that, okay. But I'm going to have it on the record, because in the future, if anybody says, oh, I didn't know, I thought I couldn't testify, my lawyer told me no. I mean, the plethora of cases that are out there, I think the case law supports a colloquy with the defendant regarding the right to testify and the right to remain silent. So I'll ask, make sure that nobody's threatened you, forced you, or coerced you to make this decision, that nobody's promised you anything, any benefit or a particular outcome to make this decision, that you've made this decision freely and voluntarily. That is, it's your decision and your decision alone. If your choice is to testify, I'm just going to ask you if you've had adequate time to prepare with your lawyer for that testimony, and then I will make my findings. So that's what I do. So I'm glad I brought it up. That way you're aware of it. And if you decide not to answer any of those, that'll certainly be your prerogative. So we'll have that. Like I said, we'll have that. I want to let you know about it. And then we'll have that conversation either tomorrow or next week. All right. Anything else? That was everything on my list.
I have one matter about an ex parte brief discussion I had with the court, and I supplied the court with some case law to support my position, and I'm hoping that the court will, now that the defense case is starting, I'm hoping that the court will give me some response.
All right. Well, I think whenever you had approached me about this case that you gave me the other day, ex parte, without going into the details, my answer was, I think that the state has every right to be heard on this request. So I will leave it to you. Do you want to talk about it?
Fair enough. Can you give me a moment?
Of course. Absolutely.
All right, Judge White, we're good. Request withdrawn.
Okay. All right. Anything else we can talk about today? No?
What time are we starting tomorrow? 9, she said 9.
Where'd my list go? Let's shoot for 8:45, just in case there's any last-minute stuff. And then with the goal of starting at 9.
And is the plan then to have testimony all day?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Right? We're going to have them lined up one after another, ready to go?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll be there off the record until tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Judge.
More continuing coverage is on the way.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Press subscribe now.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.